How to Raise a Wild Child: The Art and Science of Falling in Love with Nature. Author: Scott D. Sampson. Part 1: Nature, Lost and Found. The Extinction of Experience. The average American child spends only 4 to 7 minutes a day outdoor. Those same children devote more than 7 hours daily to staring at screens, replacing reality with virtual alternatives. Most boys rack up more than 10,000 gaming hours before the age of 21. Children can now recognize greater than 1,000 corporate logos, but fewer than 10 plants native to their region. The net result is what author Robert Michael Pyle has dubbed the extinction of experience, highlighted by the gapping chasm between children and nature. Children who regularly play in nature show heightened motor control, including balance, coordination, and agility. They tend to engage more in imaginative and creative play, which in turn fosters language, abstract reasoning, and problem-solving skills, together with a sense of wonder. It turns out that children-nature bonds are as essential as mother-infant bonds to the health of a child and the adult they will one day become. If children are to grow into healthy, well-adjusted adults, nature needs to be integral to their everyday lives, from place-based learning at schools to unstructured, unsupervised, even risk-prone play around home. So how can we do that? Experiential learning. When I decided to learn bird language, my daughter Jade, then 10 years old, gladly joined in on the fun. By the end of the first month of regular visits to our backyard sit spot, Jade and I were beginning to see the neighborhood differently. Those nameless feathered creatures chirping in the trees were transforming into distinct species, and even distinct individuals, each with a unique voice and character. We came to understand their behaviors and their different vocalizations. More importantly, we found our awareness expanding, and with it our sense of appreciation and even empathy. When familiar birds were absent during our sit-spot sessions, we wondered what they were up to. Wildness just outside the front door was helping us deepen our bond with nature. Too often we think of nature as something wholly separate from us, sequestered in national parks, forests, and seaside beaches that require organized trips. But nature is all around us. In backyards, schoolyards, gardens, and empty lots, relentlessly thrusting skyward through sidewalk cracks. Nature isn't just a bunch of far-off plants, animals, and landscapes to learn about and visit once a year. It is an environment to be immersed in daily, especially during our childhood years. Part 2: Essential Elements. There are 3 essential elements to raising a wild child. Number 1: The Nature Mentor. We can think of a mentor not only as a trusted advisor, but as something of a trickster who helps another awaken to their full potential. Nature mentors value the natural world and demonstrate it as much through actions as words. They regularly marvel at nature's wonders, seek to deepen their own awareness and connection, and probe mysteries that catch their interest. Nature mentors are active listeners and questioners, encouraging children to tell stories of their nature encounters and being fully present to hear them. They also pay close attention to their mentees. How does your child learn best? What are they most interested in outdoors? What are the edges of their understanding and experience? Being able to answer such questions is essential. If you want to become a nature mentor for your child, it's also important to understand what nature mentors are not. They are not the people with all the answers. You may have no answers at all, yet this won't prevent you from being an effective mentor. Number 2. Learning in place. Science is the human endeavor aimed at unraveling nature's secrets. Yet, ironically, during my school years, I failed to equate nature with science. How many times did I learn the water cycle without once setting foot outside to stand immersed in that omnipresent Northwest Coast drizzle? When classroom learning is disconnected from real, lived world, should we be surprised when students disengage or even drop out? Let's step back for a moment and imagine some of the qualities we might want to see in a reinvented, truly student-centered learning environment. Such a setting would celebrate students' autonomy and individuality, building on strengths and interests to drive curiosity. It would foster rather than choke inspiration and engagement through plenty of active real-world experiences, many of them beyond the classroom walls. Place-based education uses the local community, encompassing nearby nature and culture, as the foundation for the entire curriculum. Whether the subject is math, language, art, science, or social studies, emphasis is on real-world experiences and integrative projects, for which the surrounding community is the entry point. The philosophy is that active learning requires first-hand experience, which of course is typically limited to the local regions. It's much better to understand and intimately experience one's local oak or fir forest before diving into books and videos about the disappearing Amazon rainforest. Even if the topic relates to historical events in some far-off place, say Vietnam War, it's often possible to begin in one's own community, for example, by interviewing Vietnam vets. Too often we teach young children about climate change, species extinction, and vanishing habitats before they've even had a chance to connect with the natural world. Rather than engagement, the result is often alienation, with children feeling a great sense of loss and pessimism about the future. So, before we burden children with the crisis of our time, let them establish a bond with nature. Once they care, protection will follow. Number 3. Stories. It seems to me that meaning, purpose, and belonging have less to do with where we are at any given moment than where we've been and where we're going. Only when the evolutionary epic is finally expressed throughout our culture, not just science, but in poetry, song, sculpture, and dance, will we begin to truly understand what it means to be a part of a single evolving universe. Only then will we begin to conceive of nature not as resources for our exploitation, but as relatives deserving of our compassion and empathy. Look for stories to tell children that help them see their interconnections in both space and time. You might decide to look back only 1,400 years or 140 years instead of 14 billion years. Either way, seek out the magic of narrative to share information about how things came to be. Part 3. Life Stages. Children experience the world differently through their life stages. As a nature mentor, you should understand the needs and values for each stage so you can deepen your child's connection to nature. Early childhood, the playful scientist. Early childhood is about experiencing, learning, and imagining the world through play. As the ever-quotable Albert Einstein once said, play is the highest form of research. You've seen it dozens of times, a child fiddling endlessly with some object, maybe a ballpoint pen or a rock, manipulating it to test its properties. Experimental observations might include scratching, rubbing, hitting, kicking, throwing, and licking. In the same vein, making a sand castle is a grand experiment in physics. How high can you make a sand tower before it collapses? What happens if you make the walls thicker or thinner? Or add more or less water to the sand? Children observe closely, make adjustments, innovate, and learn from others around them. We are natural-born scientists, it seems, generating observations and experimenting with the world to better understand it. Middle childhood, the age of competence. Middle childhood is the age of competence. For the first time, maturing minds and bodies enable youngsters to perform feats previously impossible, from painting and playing instrument to flossing teeth. Coupled with new mental and physical capabilities is a deep longing to demonstrate competence. This desire is so strong that children who don't see themselves as competent in academics, social, and other arenas tend to become depressed and suffer feelings of isolation. The need to learn skills and have them validated by others is a prime internal directive during these middle years. Part 4. Finding Balance. The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends restricting children's screen time to no more than 2 hours per day, less than a quarter of their present daily consumption. For children under 2 years, the AAP recommends no screen time at all. Nevertheless, by the time most children enter kindergarten, they have consumed over 5,000 hours of television, enough time to earn a college degree. The 21st century child will need to learn how to balance and integrate both technology and nature, But how can we do that? Snap some nature photos. Encourage children to take a camera outside and take photos of five natural things that interest them. Flowers, bugs, rocks, whatever. Then invite them to open their senses and spend at least 5 minutes closely observing their surroundings, including tiny things like ants and giant things like clouds. After that, the challenge is to take 5 additional photos and compare them with the first 5. This activity will strengthen both types of concentration that children need. The spotlight focus that's purpose-driven, focusing their beam tightly on a particular subject, and the lantern focus that illuminated broadly, shedding light on a broad range of subjects. Make a nature film. Encourage children to make a nature video. Videos can be a powerful format for storytelling, and making them include several elements like observation outdoors, internet and research, reflection and discussion, and filming and editing. Rewilding Revolution. Nature connection is the ship we're trying to build. Our goal as mentors is not to share facts or assign tasks. But at its root, nature mentoring is matchmaking, helping children fall in love with nature. All youngsters share this built-in bias to bond with nature. But a love for nature must be nurtured, or it will desiccate, disappear, and be forgotten. Children tend to value and care about the things we value and care about. So one of the surest paths to raising a wild child is to rewild your own mind and fall in love with nature again. Make nature a priority for you and for the children in your life. Slow down and leave time for relaxation and reflection. Make a conscious effort to expand your awareness and comment on the beautiful things you see. Clouds, flowers, trees, and birds. If you lead by example, the kids will follow.